Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 7.50 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
It was a wild weekend for Major League Baseball, and we still have one more game before we can put all of our attention on the ALCS and the NLCS. We know it's going to be the Padres and the Phillies tomorrow night, and we know the Astros will take on either the Yankees or the Guardians. We'll talk New York-Cleveland. We'll also talk about A, the World Series champion Atlanta Braves going down, and B, the team with the best record, 111-win Dodger squad getting ousted by four games by the San Diego Padres. Joining us right now to talk about that, we have Steve Bordstein, great friend of mine. Steve, it's great to get you back on. It's kind of a tradition whenever the Dodger season comes to an end, you and I get together on air. That was a very humbling experience, I think, for Dodger fans to really get taken to the woodshed by the San Diego Padres in four games.
On my list of the worst beats for the Dodgers in the last, 5 years, going back to the 2017 World Series, I got to say this one's probably just as humbling as the Astros beating the Dodgers in the World Series, simply because the win number, you know, the way they finished the season, the way they owned the Padres throughout this season, and then to have it all come to an end in a disastrous, you know, stretch of about 15 minutes on Friday night was pretty sad. Saturday night was pretty sad, and this is a tough one for Dodger fans to bear, and it's a tough conversation that I think has to be had in the Dodgers front office this week as they get ready for, you know, as they get ready for the offseason, they get ready to make some decisions. But yeah, this is a tough pill to swallow for Dodger fans.
Yeah, and I think sometimes in the world of sports, maybe we make too much out of the teams losing, not enough out of the teams winning. Again, there's plenty of time to talk about the Padres, plenty of time to talk about the Phillies. But really, Steve, two of the three best teams in baseball, in my mind, went down over the weekend. I put the Braves and the Dodgers in that top three with the Houston Astros, who are still playing. And you mentioned Dave Roberts. I don't think anyone's going to be talking about Snitker, okay? They just came off a World Series championship. They pushed all the right buttons during that stretch, and the Braves finally got it done. But when you look at Dave Roberts, time and time again, the Dodgers are among the best, most talented teams in baseball, and the only World Series championship is 2020, which, look, I give the Dodgers full credit for 2020. I know a lot of people don't want to do that, and that's fine, but they won a World Series without hosting a single home playoff game. Like, that has to account for something with everything that was going on in the world. I give them full credit for that. However, the shortcomings before and after seem to revolve around managerial decisions. And you can point to the front office and say this is all about analytics up front. This is the way Andrew Friedman wants to play it. That's fine. But once again, you can look at Dave Roberts and you have several questionable decisions that go beyond the pitching staff. You and I were talking about this over the weekend, electing to go with Austin Barnes over Cody Bellinger, electing to keep Bellinger on the bench until the final inning. There's so many missteps that I think this team continues to take, and maybe it's because they lose. I don't know. Like I said, Snitker last year, he pushed all the right buttons, so we're not talking about the shortcomings, controversial decisions. But Dave Roberts has been pushing a lot of the wrong buttons for a long time now.
And I'll even take it a step further. You know, if you're not going to elect to use Dustin May at any point during the San Diego series, why did you have him on the roster? I understand there were a lack of arms out there, but why have him on the roster to begin with? And then you mentioned some of the decisions that were made, you know, during the series itself, the El Monte disaster in the seventh inning the other night, taking him out of the game when he already was in the middle of an at bat. You know, there were decisions that were made, and I think you brought up a very good point about the shortcomings here, you know, and when it comes right down to it, I'm not blaming Freddie Freeman or Trey Turner. I'm not going to blame Mookie Betts for having an off series. I'm going to blame the one person who seems to have been absolved of all the blame through all of this, and that's Dave Roberts, because at the end of the day, the decisions that were made before the series and during the series are made by him. Those are his calls to make. The question then becomes, and you and I talked about this off the air, where do you go? Like, if you're going to put it on his shoulders, if you're going to dump all of this on the lap of Dave Roberts, and you look at the guys that have moved on, You look at the managers right now that are moving on into the next round, right? You look at possibly Terry Francona with the Guardians if they win tonight. You look at Dusty Baker and the Astros and the fact that they just steamrolled, you know, Seattle. You look at Philadelphia and you look at their managerial decisions that they've made. These are old school guys. These are the old guys that are moving on into the next round. So I go back and I say, okay, so who would have done a better job? Who could have handled this clubhouse better? And I'll say this about the clubhouse also, and I'll say this about the roster. Did you ever get this sense during this series, watching them try to rally back to extend this series to a fifth game the other night? Did you ever get a sense of this team rallying around each other? I saw shots of Trey Turner sitting on the bench by himself like he couldn't have cared less whether they moved on or not. No, and we'll get to Trey Turner here in a moment, but I never, for the better part of the second half of this season, I never got this sense that this team was fully united. I'll go back to the Freddie Freeman and the meltdown he had earlier in the season when he didn't even know if he wanted to be in Los Angeles, you know, when he had that emotional press conference after the series in Atlanta earlier in the season. Did you ever get this sense that this team was fully committed to the team? Or did you get the feeling like I did that there were a lot of individuals on this team? I don't question the commitment of Mookie Betts. I don't question the commitment of Justin Turner, but I'll question the commitment of a guy like Trey Turner. And to some degree, I'm going to question the commitment of guys who are, you know, in that 1 year rotation, like Tyler Anderson. I don't know if he's coming back, but I mean, I never got this sense that this team was fully committed to everyone else on board.
Yeah. You know, it's tough because when you become a well-oiled machine, that type of visual isn't always present. And what I mean by that is the media doesn't, you know, it was fun last year to look at this Atlanta Braves team and talk about the camaraderie. It was fun. It's fun to have this conversation with the Houston Astros, talking about all the adversity that they have had to face over the last 5 years. It's never really been at the forefront. I think it's a great question, and I don't know the answer to it, because when you look at the Dodgers, we don't need to worry about camaraderie. We don't need that story. Why? Because they keep dishing out nine figures to talented players. So I don't know that it fits the media's rhetoric. And if that is the case, we're not going to see it. Does that make sense?
It does. And I almost wonder if having a 20-game lead over San Diego throughout the better part of the last month and a half of the season wasn't, in fact, more of a detriment. I know there was that discussion of, you know, teams having 5 days off before the second round, that might have hurt them. I don't buy into that. But, a more fun season to watch the guys on the team kind of rally around each other was the season in which they lost the National League West by a game to San Francisco. Because they were more rallied around each other. They were working together. Those last 60 days of this season, there was no competition. So maybe having that 20-game cushion, because remember when it was the Yankees that had a 20-game cushion, and they went through that little mini meltdown there for like a month. Well, look at them now. Now they're a game away from moving on to the American League Championship Series. They got through that. Why? Because they gave up that 20-game lead, and suddenly here comes Toronto, and here comes Tampa, here comes Baltimore to some degree. And they rallied around it. They got through that, you know. And I almost wonder if that didn't come into play. But again, that goes back to your original question of, that's a managerial issue.
Right.
If you can't keep a team focused with a 20-game lead in the division going into the postseason, if you can't keep that vision, that focus on target for what the real target, for what the real bullseye is there, then that comes down to Dave Roberts. That comes down to the front office. That comes down to a decision needs to be made. But then the next question is, who? Who's the leader of that clubhouse if not for Dave Roberts? Who do you bring in? Because no one's got the experience to deal with a team that's won, what, 7 of 8 divisional championships, has been to the World Series 3 times in the last 5 years. Who else can do that? Who else can come in and take over that team?
Again, he's Steve Bortstein joining us right now as we talk Major League Baseball. Steve, all this talk surrounding the Dodgers, What about the Atlanta Braves? And I think that it is comparable in a lot of sense, right? Because, again, I had the Braves and the Dodgers with the Astros in my top three. I don't think too many people would necessarily argue that. When I look at Atlanta, they didn't necessarily have the same problems that the Dodgers had going into the postseason. And the problems I'm alluding to, the Dodgers had Julio Urias, they had Clayton Kershaw. After that, that rotation to me was a little bleak, and that was some of the worry that I had. I mean, if we go back time and time again here on the show, I was always a little, I picked the Dodgers to come out of the NL, but I was always a little hesitant because I didn't know if you could rely on Tyler Anderson and Tony Gonsolin and Andrew Heaney once you got to the postseason. On the flip side, Atlanta didn't have that problem. And they just lost to a team that's playing better baseball right now and a star-studded Philly team that I think maybe we underrate a little bit based off of regular season performance. All that being said, Atlanta didn't have the pitching problems that LA had, and they still came up short.
No, but and it's funny you bring up Atlanta. Let's talk about Philadelphia because they went through a horrendous first part of the season. And what did they do? They made a managerial change that injected some life into that team. And suddenly they found relevancy in Bryce Harper. And suddenly you get Schwarber off the DL. And suddenly you get Real Muto playing the way he's supposed to be playing. And, you know, a team that was falling far short of expectations in April, May, and June, they suddenly find their stride. They make a managerial change. Boom. Suddenly they're where they're supposed to be. This is, for as much as we can complain as Dodgers fans, if you're a Braves fan, though, you've got to feel absolutely just wrecked right now because they had the rotation. They had the lineup. You know, they get Acuna back. It looked like, all things considered, this was supposed to be a runaway for them to repeat, to get back to the World Series. So I think if you're a Braves fan, you've got to feel absolutely train wrecked right now.
No question. And I think, you know, looking at the free agency questions for the Dodgers, I mean, Clayton Kershaw, as he pitched his final game in a Dodger uniform, as Trey Turner played his final game. You look at Atlanta, it's the same conversation. I mean, Dansby Swanson has been the shortstop of this crew for 6-7 seasons. He is now past his final year of arbitration. You have Charlie Morton. You also have Kenley Jansen. There's a lot of free agency question marks with the Atlanta Braves as well.
There are. And, you know, if you're, again, if this goes back to the Trey Turner and Clayton Kershaw question. Yes, they both played their last game for the Dodgers. Whether or not Clayton Kershaw goes on to Texas or whether he retires, that's a decision I'm going to let him make. And quite frankly, he owes the Dodgers no explanation, nothing. What he's done to the Dodgers, I'm fine with. I'm not going to suggest in any way, shape, or form that he leaves with a bitter taste in the mouth of Dodgers fans. Because if he does, then you're not doing the fandom thing right. He gave his all for the Dodgers. I have no issue with it. Trey Turner, as far as I'm concerned, he can go. As talented a player as he is, I don't think for a single moment he ever bought in to the Dodgers' way of doing things, whatever that is, whatever that behavioral pattern is. He's not a Dodger. He's a baseball player at the end of the day who wants to make his money. He wants to run the bases. He wants to make headlines. And so he let him go. Whoever that is to replace him, whether it's going to be Swanson, whether it's going to be Correa, whether, I know you and I have talked about, you know, the Aaron Judge factor here, that's a decision that'll be made in the offseason. But I'm okay with that as far as, you know, the Dodgers are concerned. I want to throw one to you, though. Because of the success in the postseason, whether or not they beat Philadelphia or not, does Ha-Seon Kim take over as the third baseman or the shortstop of the San Diego Padres? Because they've done this without Tatis. And the Fernando Tatis question has to be addressed during this offseason by the Padres because they did this without the headache and without that shadow hanging over this organization.
No question. I think you and I had this conversation on Saturday night. And I, for the longest time, I had the mindset, okay, when Tatis comes back, you move him to center field. Grisham is removed from the lineup because Kim has been more than adequate in the middle infield. That honestly, when we're talking about Fernando Tatis, the one hole in his game is how he performs in the field, right? But now you take a look at the way this team has rallied almost in spite of Fernando Tatis, right? You give this guy a $340 million deal, and it's been a train wreck ever since. If it's riding a motorcycle, if it's testing positive for PEDs, if it's getting into fights with Manny Machado in the clubhouse. I mean, you have to be extremely immature for Manny Machado to be the voice of reasoning in any sort of debate, right? I'm with you. I think it's a fair argument to have. I really do. Now, you could also look at this if you're a Padres fan and say, look, we're going to be that much more potent when he comes back next year. I buy that argument, too.
Say that again. I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
If you're a Padres fan, you say we're going to be this much more potent next year when he comes back. Yeah, I buy that argument, too.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's explosive if Tatis does come back. But it's explosive in a way that you don't know whether or not he's matured. You don't know whether or not he's figured out, okay, I can't do this anymore. And we like to think, once they get into trouble the first, second, third time, they're okay. I don't know that that's the case for Fernando Tatis at all. And you know who else doesn't know that? Fernando Tatis doesn't know that. And as long as he's that wild card, for lack of a better term, I don't want anything to do with him if I was the Padres. I wouldn't trust him at this point. I wouldn't trust him as far as I could throw him at this point.
Steve Bordstein joining us right now. Steve, before I let you go, we have to jump over to tonight's contest. Jameson Taillon's going to be on the mound for the Yankees tonight. Is that good enough for them to get a win? Who are you taking? Who advances onto the ALCS?
This Guardian story has been fun. You and I talked about this series in particular. I thought this was going to be the one of the more entertaining series. I think this is going to be a high-scoring contest, and the Yankees have the advantage in that regard. But, boy, it's been fun to watch the Guardians do what they're doing, and they're going to be a fun team to watch. It wouldn't shock me to see them win, but I think the Yankees pull this out. They move on to the ALCS, Yankees and Astros at that point. And then in the National League, you got the Phillies and the Padres. So as much as I'd love it to be a Dodgers, in this Final Four right now, it's a fun postseason. I'm pulling for the Padres, and I'm going to pull for the Astros just because I think those are the teams that I think are going to move. I think they're going to be fun if they do get to the World Series. And I'm a Padres believer now because I have that weird thing. You and I talked about it. Like, I'm going to stick with the National League West. If it's not going to be the Dodgers, then I'll let it be someone else in the NL West. I'll go Padres, and I'll go Yankees. Astros. Padres, Astros in the World Series.
Steve Bordstein, always a pleasure to get you on the show. Steve, look forward to talking with you again as we get a little deeper into the postseason.
Oh, my pleasure as always, sir. Thank you.
We're going to pause for just a moment. When we return, we'll talk about the start of the NBA season. Tomorrow night, two games. The Jazz will tip off on Wednesday. James Holis of the Dunk Tales podcast will join us right after this.